Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we will explore the seminal work Influence by Robert B. Cialdini, PhD. Renowned for his expertise in psychology and marketing, Dr. Cialdini offers a profound insight into the mechanics of persuasion. Influence distills 35 years of evidence-based research, unmasking how marketers, salespeople, and con artists can manipulate our behaviors and sway our decisions. This book sheds light on why we often say yes when we mean to say no, and helps readers understand the psychological strategies behind certain requests. Cialdini's work not just exposes the art of persuasion, but also arms you with the tools to ward off manipulation and use these persuasive techniques ethically in your own ventures. Whether you're a professional in marketing or sales, or simply someone who wishes to improve their negotiation skills and resist manipulation, Influence is tailored for you. Dive into this episode and fortify your understanding of both the subtle art of persuasion and the science of protection against manipulation. Through Dr. Cialdini's extensive research and practical insights, unravel the complexities of influence in our everyday lives. Influence, the psychology of persuasion. Introduction. Discover the art of persuasion and make it work for you. Have you ever found yourself carrying a brand new gadget that you didn't plan to buy when you walked into the store? Or perhaps you joined a charity event because a charming volunteer convinced you. Maybe you're surprised to find yourself locked into a long fitness center membership that seemed like a good idea at the time. Chances are, you were influenced by a compliance professional, expert skilled in the art of persuasion, knowing just how to make us say yes, often, without us even realizing it. Enter Robert B. Cialdini, a man who has felt like a target for manipulators for much of his life. This vulnerability turned into a professional and personal quest, leading him to dig deep into the mechanics of persuasion. Through extensive research, interviews with persuasion experts, and direct observation of these compliance professionals in action, Cialdini has unraveled the sophisticated tactics employed to shape our decisions. What you'll gain from diving into these insights isn't just the ability to ward off unwanted manipulation. This information will arm you with knowledge on when and how these strategies are used, and even how you can ethically apply these tactics in your life, whether in negotiations, business deals, or everyday interactions. Get ready to explore the 6 foundational principles that govern the tactics of persuasion. Effective strategies compliance professionals use that can also empower your persuasive abilities. Why simple acts of kindness from strangers might sometimes have strings attached. How a few strategic words can dramatically alter an outcome, such as cutting in line with less hassle. By the end of this exploration, you'll not only be better equipped to detect when manipulation is at play, but also harness some of these techniques for your own benefit. Whether it's turning sun lovers into passionate advocates for a cause or navigating complex social scenarios, understanding the dynamics of influence can dramatically alter outcomes in your favor. Part 1. How our mental shortcuts can be manipulated. Consider the humble mother turkey, a symbol of maternal instinct at its finest. She meticulously nurtures and protects her chicks, but her nurturing is contingent on a simple cue, the cheep cheep sound her chicks make. This sound is so crucial that she will care for anything that makes it, even a stuffed replica of her natural enemy, the polecat, as long as it cheeps convincingly. This might seem like a bizarre and simplistic way to trigger such important behavior, but it's a survival mechanism. It allows the turkey to make fast, usually effective decisions without pausing to analyze every detail. We humans, although more complex, operate under a surprisingly similar principle. Our brains are hardwired to look for shortcuts, which psychologists call heuristics, to make quick judgments. These mental shortcuts are essential, given the sheer amount of information we encounter daily, but they can also be manipulated. Take, for example, the social experiment involving a photocopier and cues. When a researcher asked to cut in line with a reason, no matter how flimsy, compliance skyrocketed. Phrases like, because I'm in a rush, or even because I need to make copies, were almost equally effective, with compliance rates at 94% and 93%, respectively, compared to only 60% when no reason was provided. This demonstrates our reason heuristic, where our brains sometimes value the presence of a reason over the validity of the argument. But it doesn't stop there. These shortcuts can be turned against us. Marketing specialists, salespeople, and other compliance professionals excel in crafting scenarios that trip these heuristics, leading us to make decisions that might not be in our best interests. For instance, many believe that higher-priced items are inherently better quality. Retailers can exploit this belief by marking up the prices of unpopular items, thereby boosting sales without improving the product. In understanding these principles, we can begin to see how often we, like the mother turkey, are influenced by simple, sometimes irrelevant, cues. Recognizing and scrutinizing these can help us avoid making choices that feel more like reflexes than decisions. In the upcoming sections, we'll delve into 6 fundamental psychological triggers: reciprocation, scarcity, consistency, social proof, liking, and authority. Each a key to unlocking why we respond the way we do, and how these responses can be both a strength and a susceptibility. Part 2: Understanding the Powerful Pull of Reciprocation. Imagine you're walking through a bustling city street and someone hands you a free sample or maybe a rose. Feels nice, right? But then comes an ask, a donation, a minute of your time, perhaps purchasing something. Suddenly, you're feeling the weight of an invisible obligation. This scenario taps into a deep-seated psychological trigger, the principle of reciprocation. This principle suggests that when someone does something for us, we are wired to want to return the favor. It's a mechanism that's been pivotal in building and sustaining social cooperation and trust within communities since the dawn of humanity. The notion that one good turn deserves another isn't just a quaint saying. It's rooted in social psychology. This instinct is so strong that it can compel people and even nations to act in surprising ways. For example, in 1985, despite grappling with severe internal crises, Ethiopia made a monetary donation to Mexico following an earthquake. This act of generosity was a repayment for assistance Mexico had provided to Ethiopia 5 decades earlier during Italian invasions in 1935. Our desire to reciprocate can be exploited, though, turning a trait beneficial for societal cohesion into a tool for manipulation. Take the study conducted by psychologist Dennis Regan in 1971, where participants were more likely to buy raffle tickets from a man named Joe who had earlier given them a Coke, even if they didn't particularly like Joe. They felt a compulsion to clear the debt they felt owed, illustrating how even a small initial favor can trigger a disproportionately large sense of obligation. This principle of reciprocation has been used effectively by groups like the Hare Krishna movement, which experienced significant fundraising success by offering flowers to passers-by, who then felt compelled to make a donation, even if begrudgingly. Recognizing when reciprocity is being used to manipulate doesn't mean rejecting all acts of kindness. Rather, it means developing a mindful awareness of the intention behind the gesture. Are these acts genuine, or are they calculated moves designed to elicit a specific response? Distinguishing between the two can help maintain the positive aspects of reciprocal exchanges while guarding against exploitation. To resist undue influence, consider the genuine nature of every favor. Was the free sample on the street given freely or with strings attached? By identifying when you're being swayed to reciprocate under false pretenses, you can make more autonomous decisions. Thus, while reciprocation is a cornerstone of human interaction, learning to navigate its complexities in modern society is crucial. This doesn't diminish its value. It simply adds a layer of critical thinking to our social exchanges, ensuring that our responses are as genuine as the initial acts that prompted them. Part 3: The Art of Negotiating. Why outrageous initial demands can lead to favorable outcomes. In the dance of negotiation, the steps you choose can dramatically shift the outcome. A particularly cunning move is the rejection-then-retreat strategy, which involves starting with a high demand and then backing down to a lesser one. This technique not only capitalizes on the human tendency to reciprocate concessions, but also uses the contrast principle to enhance the attractiveness of the second, more reasonable request. Consider a simple scenario. A young Boy Scout attempts to sell you a $5 ticket to their annual circus. You decline. The Scout then shifts tactics, offering chocolate bars for $1 each instead. Feeling the need to reciprocate the apparent concession the Scout has made by lowering his asking price, you find yourself buying not one but two chocolate bars. This illustrates how our brains are wired to respond favorably when we perceive that someone has made a concession, even if it's part of their plan from the start. The effectiveness of this strategy is amplified by the contrast effect. When the second, smaller request follows the initial larger one, the smaller ask seems even more reasonable by comparison, increasing the likelihood of agreement. This negotiation tactic is a staple in various arenas, including labor discussions, where extreme initial demands are methodically pared back to extract concessions from the opposing party. However, it's essential to note that the initial demand shouldn't be so extreme as to appear in bad faith, which could sabotage the negotiation altogether. The rejection-then-retreat strategy is not just theoretical, but has found its place in significant historical events. Take, for instance, the Watergate scandal. Initially, G. Gordon Liddy proposed a $1 million plan involving kidnapping and other illegal activities to the committee to re-elect President Nixon, which was immediately rejected. However, he then scaled back to a still illegal, but less shocking, $250,000 burglary plan. This retreating offer, now seeming milder in contrast to his initial outrageous scheme, was accepted. The acceptance of this lesser evil, born from the strategic use of rejection then retreat, ultimately led to a scandal that shook the United States. Thus, understanding and utilizing the rejection then retreat strategy can be a powerful tool in negotiations, potentially turning initial refusals into eventual agreements. Whether you're negotiating a job offer, a business deal, or any agreement in between, recognizing these patterns can help you craft your approach to yield the most beneficial outcomes. Part 4. Scarcity drives desire. The psychology behind limited-time offers. You've likely heard these phrases echoing through advertisements and storefronts. For a limited time only. Only a few left in stock. This offer ends soon. These aren't just catchy slogans. They're strategic deployments of the scarcity principle, a powerful psychological trigger suggesting that we attribute higher value to things that are scarce or hard to obtain. This principle operates on a basic human response. The harder something is to acquire, the more valuable it becomes in our eyes. Essentially, we can't stand to miss out. Not only does scarcity make us see an item as more valuable, but it also hurries us to make a decision, often bypassing our usual thoughtful decision-making process. Consider a study led by one of Robert Cialdini's students in 1982. Shoppers were informed of a limited-time sale on beef, and results showed they purchased 3 times more beef than when no time constraint was imposed. The study further revealed that when these shoppers believed they were uniquely privy to this information, their purchases increased 6-fold compared to those who were unaware of the sale's exclusivity. For scarcity to significantly sway our decisions, 2 conditions are typically met. Firstly, the impact of scarcity is more pronounced when an item's availability has recently decreased rather than if it has always been limited. This can explain, for instance, why acute deteriorations in societal conditions can precipitate revolutions more readily than prolonged hardship. The sudden shortage heightens the perceived need for change. Secondly, when we're pitted against others for the same scarce resource, our desire to acquire it doesn't just increase. It can spiral into a competitive frenzy. This plays out commonly in auctions or housing markets, where the mere suggestion of competing bidders can encourage potential buyers to act quickly and decisively, often leading to irrational spending. Consider the notorious case of Barry Diller at ABC, who, during an open bid auction for the television rights to The Poseidon Adventure, ended up spending a record-setting $3.3 million for a single airing of the film. Here, the visibility of competing bids, combined with the high stakes of losing out, drove the price to an irrational height, ultimately proving disadvantageous for the network. To navigate the manipulative potential of scarcity, it's essential to differentiate between genuine interest and induced urgency. Before making a decision driven by scarcity, ask yourself, do I want this item because it genuinely meets a need or desire, or am I being swept up in the fear of missing out? By recognizing when scarcity is skewing our decision-making, we can step back and assess our true motivations, potentially saving ourselves from making choices we might later regret. Part 5. The allure of the forbidden. Why bans increase desire? Have you ever noticed how something becomes irresistibly attractive the moment it's off limits? This phenomenon isn't just observed in children who reach for the toy they've been told not to touch. It extends to adults and permeates various aspects of society, highlighting a critical psychological response to prohibition. This response is particularly evident in the realm of censorship. When information is restricted or a viewpoint is silenced, it paradoxically becomes more valuable and intriguing to those from whom it's withheld. Consider a study from the 1970s at the University of North Carolina. Students demonstrated increased support for a speech on co-ed dorms merely because they were informed the speech was banned on campus, despite never hearing the content. The effect of banned information isn't limited to academic settings. It also plays a significant role in judicial processes. Research indicates that juries are likely to award higher damages when they are explicitly instructed to disregard the fact that the defendant has insurance coverage. The act of making information forbidden increases its perceived importance and impact, compelling juries to focus on it more than they might have otherwise. A stark example of the allure of the forbidden can be seen in consumer behavior as well. In Dade County, Florida, when phosphate-containing laundry detergents were banned, residents didn't just passively accept the decision. Instead, they began hoarding the product, smuggling it into the county, and perceiving it as superior to available alternatives, showcasing a classic case of increased desire caused by restriction. This is encapsulated in what's known as the Romeo and Juliet effect, named after Shakespeare's famous star-crossed lovers, whose affection grew in the face of familial opposition. A study involving Colorado couples found that when external forces like parents tried to interfere in a romantic relationship, the couple's commitment and desire to marry strengthened. Conversely, when interference waned, so did their romantic intensity. The underlying thread in all these scenarios is a fundamental human aversion to losing access or opportunities. This aversion triggers a heightened desire for the banned item or information, much like the unattainable fruit in the Garden of Eden. Understanding and anticipating the Romeo and Juliet effect can be crucial in fields ranging from marketing to policymaking, where the implications of banning or restricting access can have unintended and counterintuitive results. Part 6. The power of consistency. Why we feel compelled to match our actions with our words. Imagine a lazy day at the beach, the sun shining down, the sound of waves lapping at the shore. You want to take a swim, but you're worried about leaving your belongings unattended. What do you do? According to a study by psychologist Thomas Moriarty, the solution could be simpler and more effective than you might think. Just ask a nearby sunbather to watch your things. If you do, there's a high likelihood they'll act on your behalf, even chasing down a thief if necessary. Why would a stranger exert such effort? It boils down to a fundamental psychological drive for consistency in our actions and words. Moriarty's experiment revealed that while only 20% of bystanders would intervene in a theft on their own, this number skyrocketed to 95% if they were previously asked to watch the belongings. The commitment made to the belonging's owner compels them to act in alignment with their promise. This commitment to consistency isn't just a trivial part of our day at the beach. It plays a significant role across various aspects of life. It underpins our need for predictability and less decision-making stress. Once we commit to something verbally or through our actions, we strive to maintain that course to align with our self-perception and to avoid the discomfort of cognitive dissonance. Public commitments are particularly potent. Consider the psychological strategies employed during the Korean War. Chinese interrogators managed to elicit cooperation from American POWs initially, through small acknowledgments that the US was not perfect. These minor concessions, once made public, pigeonholed prisoners into a collaborator identity, both in their eyes and those of their peers. This self-perception, solidified by their signed statements, drastically altered their behavior in favor of the captors. This phenomenon is also exploited in sales through the foot-in-the-door technique. Here, a small initial commitment, like a minor purchase, transforms a person's image of themselves into that of a customer, making it easier for them to agree to further, more significant purchases down the line. Understanding the drive for consistency can help us navigate situations where our commitments are tested or manipulated. By recognizing the weight of our words and commitments, we can better judge when they are being used to influence our actions, helping us make decisions that are truly in our best interests. Next time you're urged to make a small commitment, think critically. Is it just a harmless request, or a stepping stone leading you somewhere you may not wish to go? Part 7. The Value of Effort. Why difficult achievements feel more worthwhile. Across cultures and continents, from African tribes to American college fraternities, the tradition of intense initiation rituals prevails. These often harrowing experiences are not just a test of resilience or a cruel tradition. They serve a psychological purpose. They embed a deep sense of value and belonging to the group among the initiates. The underlying principle? The more effort something requires, the more we tend to appreciate it. This concept extends beyond tribal or fraternal boundaries, into more formal institutions, and even in everyday situations. Consider the resistance college fraternities have shown towards replacing degrading initiations with community service activities. The logic is stark. Physical or psychological trials force initiates to justify internally why they endured these hardships, usually culminating in a higher regard for the group and a deeper commitment to its causes. In contrast, community service, though challenging, offers an external justification, doing good, that doesn't necessarily strengthen group loyalty in the same way. Interestingly, this psychological dynamic is not just about group behavior. It also plays into the tactics of compliance professionals, like salespeople who skillfully employ what's known as the lowball technique. Here's how it works. A car dealer offers you an irresistibly low price on a vehicle. Once you're hooked by the offer and have perhaps even taken the car for a test drive, the dealer retracts the original offer under the pretense of a bank error or another excuse, presenting a higher price instead. During the test drive, you've likely convinced yourself of the car's other appealing attributes, which makes backing out more difficult due to your newfound reasoning and the initial time investment. This tactic leverages not just the perceived increase in value due to the effort getting involved in the purchase process, but also our inclination for consistency to align our actions with our decisions. To guard against such manipulations, it's essential to step back and evaluate the situation. Would you still make the purchase if you had known the real price from the beginning? If the answer is no, it might be time to reconsider your decision. Always remember that the value we place on our experiences and possessions is often tinted by the effort we invest in them, for better or for worse. Recognizing this can help us make more informed and less emotionally charged decisions. Part 8. The Impact of Social Proof in Decision-Making. Ever noticed how laugh tracks in sitcoms seem to cue when to chuckle, even if the joke doesn't quite hit the mark? There's a reason these auditory signals are embedded in these shows. Because they work. Research has shown that people are likely to laugh more often and for longer durations when they hear others laughing, even if that laughter is electronically generated. This phenomenon is rooted in the principle of social proof, which suggests that people determine what is correct largely by observing what others do. The principle of social proof extends beyond TV shows. For instance, church ushers might place a couple of bills in the collection basket before passing it around to encourage the congregation to donate. Similarly, phrases like best-selling or fastest-growing are often seen in advertisements to suggest a bandwagon effect, implicitly convincing potential customers that many others have already made the purchase, so it must be a worthwhile decision. Social proof becomes particularly influential when people are unsure of what to do. A tragic example of this occurred during the murder of Kitty Genovese in New York in 1964, where multiple neighbors failed to intervene or contact the police as she was being attacked. This incident highlighted what is known as the bystander effect, the phenomenon where individuals are less likely to help a victim when other people are present. This effect can be attributed to two main factors: the diffusion of responsibility, believing that someone else will act, and the need for conformity, gauging the seriousness of the situation based on the reaction of others. In uncertain situations, such as deciphering whether a person in distress needs help or is merely partaking in a benign activity, people often look to the behavior of others as a guide. Unfortunately, if others are non-responsive or passive, it may signal that no urgent action is needed, thus reinforcing the cycle of inaction. However, if you ever find yourself in an emergency situation within a crowd, here's a tip for effectively soliciting help. Single out an individual directly. Make eye contact and speak clearly, such as saying, "You, in the blue jacket, please call for help." By personally engaging someone, you create a sense of responsibility and urgency that pierces through the bystander effect, significantly increasing the likelihood they will assist. Understanding and recognizing the power of social proof can help us make more informed decisions and, importantly, know how to act decisively in critical situations. Part 9: The influence of similarity in shaping our decisions. One potent aspect of human behavior is our instinct to mimic the actions and choices of people who we perceive as similar to ourselves. This natural inclination can shape our decisions in profound, sometimes drastic ways. For instance, teenagers are highly influenced by the fashion and opinions of their peers, largely because they see those peers as reflections of themselves. This tendency to emulate can sometimes have tragic consequences. Research has demonstrated that highly publicized suicides often lead to an increase in accidental deaths, such as car or airplane crashes, in the weeks that follow. These incidents, often termed as copycat suicides, suggest that some individuals may decide to end their lives in ways that appear accidental, influenced by the suicide details shared in the media. The phenomenon is so significant that it's been observed that a single front-page suicide story can result in approximately 58 additional deaths of individuals who otherwise might have continued to live. This is known as the Werther effect, named after the novel The Sorrows of Young Werther by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, which was linked to a succession of imitative suicides across Europe. The effect tends to be more pronounced among individuals who see themselves as similar to the person who committed suicide, whether in terms of age, situation, or other demographic factors. In a more benign context, the impact of similarity influences marketing strategies significantly. Advertisers often feature testimonials from ordinary people to appeal to a broad audience, utilizing the viewer's identification with the person to endorse the product more convincingly. These endorsements are designed to resonate with the average consumer, making the product seem more appealing and relatable. To guard against being unduly swayed by such engineered similarities, it's crucial to develop a keen awareness of these tactics. Recognize when testimonials and endorsements might be crafted to exploit this aspect of human psychology. Often, the dialogue in these advertisements is scripted, and the scenarios are far from genuine. By identifying these instances of counterfeit social proof, you can make more informed decisions that reflect your true preferences and needs, not just a reflexive mimicry of others deemed similar to you. In recognizing the influence that similarity exerts on our decision-making, we empower ourselves to make choices based on thoughtful consideration rather than passive conformity. Part 10. The Persuasive Power of Likeability. Have you ever wondered why you seem to agree more readily with people you like? This isn't just coincidence. It's rooted deeply in human psychology. We are inherently more compliant with individuals whom we find appealing. This phenomenon is cleverly utilized in scenarios like Tupperware parties, where the social setting and the host's identity play crucial roles in influencing purchase decisions. At a Tupperware party, the atmosphere is charged with strategies designed to enhance compliance. From the reciprocity of receiving gifts to the social proof of seeing others buying. Significantly, the invitation usually comes from someone you already like and trust, a friend, making it even more likely that you'll be persuaded to buy. But the mechanics of making someone likable aren't confined to Tupperware parties. Salespeople, advertisers, and various professionals use specific likability triggers to sway us. These triggers include flattery, claiming similarities, and demonstrating physical attractiveness, which can lead to a halo effect. This effect makes attractive individuals appear more trustworthy, intelligent, and kind, in essence, more likable. Moreover, the strategies extend beyond physical attributes and praises. A demonstrated camaraderie towards a shared goal, or an alignment in adversities, the good cop, bad cop scenario, for instance, can significantly boost someone's likability. Even something as abstract as the environment in which we encounter someone can affect our perception. For example, meeting someone in a pleasant setting, like during a delicious meal, can enhance the positive feelings we associate with that person. However, while likability can be a genuine outcome of interpersonal interaction, it's also a tool frequently exploited to manipulate decisions. To guard against unwarranted influence, it is crucial to step back and assess our feelings critically. If you find your affinity for someone has escalated unusually quickly, it's worth considering whether you're responding to their innate qualities or to subtle manipulative cues designed to exploit psychological tendencies. Recognizing when our feelings might be the result of manipulation not only helps in guarding our decisions, but also ensures that our interactions remain genuine and our choices truly our own. Part 11. The Unquestioned Influence of Authority Figures. From a young age, we are conditioned to respect and comply with authority figures, such as teachers, doctors, and police officers. This deep-seated obedience is so ingrained that often we don't even pause to question the directives of those perceived to hold authority. This concept was famously demonstrated by psychologist Stanley Milgram in the 1960s through an experiment wherein volunteers followed orders to administer what they believed were painful electric shocks to other participants, simply because an authority figure instructed them to do so. The experiment shockingly revealed just how willing people are to follow orders against their moral judgments when they come from an authoritative source. Another example highlights the extent of blind obedience to authority and the lack of questioning it entails. A nurse, following a doctor's orders written as "administer the medicine in our ear," mistakenly applied the medication to a patient's rear, misunderstanding the abbreviation for "right ear" as "rear." Neither the nurse nor the patient questioned this directive, showcasing the powerful suppressant effect authority can have on critical thinking. Authority is not only established through direct interaction, but also symbolically. Titles, uniforms, and professional attire act as shortcuts that signal authority to others, compelling compliance often without a second thought. These symbols can be so compelling that they affect our perceptions profoundly. For instance, individuals with titles are often perceived as taller than they really are. However, the misuse of authority symbols is common. Con artists, for instance, exploit these symbols to gain trust and manipulate others, sometimes by wearing uniforms or adopting professional titles without merit. To ensure we are not unduly influenced by those masquerading as authorities or those who are authorities, but may not have our best interests in mind, it's crucial to scrutinize the source of the authority. 1. verification of authority. Is the person truly an expert in the field they are issuing commands or advice on, or are they simply donning the trappings of power? For example, the actor Robert Young played a doctor on TV and later endorsed Sanka Coffee in commercials, leveraging his on-screen persona to influence consumers, even though he had no medical expertise. 2. Assessment of intention. Does the authority figure have something to gain from our compliance? For instance, a waiter recommending an expensive wine might be more motivated by a higher tip than by providing the best dining experience. Understanding these dynamics can help us navigate interactions with authority figures more mindfully, ensuring that our responses are reasoned and not merely reflexive. By questioning the legitimacy and motives of authority, we can safeguard our decision-making process from undue influence. Final summary. In our daily lives, we often rely on mental shortcuts to make decisions quickly and efficiently. These shortcuts, while generally helpful, expose us to manipulation by those who understand and exploit them for personal gain. Advertisers, salespeople, and con artists are adept at using these psychological triggers to influence our actions in ways that benefit them, often at our expense. The principles that these compliance professionals manipulate include reciprocation, where we feel compelled to return favors, scarcity, which makes us value what is less available, consistency, wherein we strive to align our actions with our commitments, social proof, leading us to mimic the actions of others, liking, as we are more likely to comply with those we find appealing, and authority, under which we tend to obey those in positions of power or who exhibit symbols of authority. To protect ourselves from being unduly influenced, it's crucial to recognize when these principles are being invoked. By becoming aware of how these triggers operate, we can critically assess our responses to requests or offers, ensuring that our decisions are truly our own and not the product of subtle manipulation. This knowledge empowers us to interact with the world more mindfully, safeguarding our interests while navigating the complex social environments we inhabit. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.